Hello everyone, welcome to JTalk Extra Time. I'm John Steele, here again as ever. In this episode of JTET, you're going to listen to part two of our big J3 season preview for 2022. So hopefully you've had a chance to listen to part one already. In this episode, I was joined again by Mike Innes. In the first half, we talked about three sides that are going to be in the third tier of the Japanese game for this season. That's Matsumoto, Toyama, and Fujieda My FC. Then after a short comfort break, we reconvened. We talked about three more sides, Numazu, FC Gifu, and Gainare Tottori. So I hope you enjoy the show and our thoughts on these six teams before the big J3 kickoff. Please stay tuned because part three, running the rule over the last six teams from the third tier that we haven't talked about yet, that's coming up soon. But as always, thanks for supporting the pod, JTalk and JTET. And if you're a Patreon, extra special thanks to you. We really appreciate the support. That's enough from me for now, though, I think. Enjoy the show. Here come Mike and me again, strangely. Enjoy the show. Talk to you soon. JTalk Extra Time. Hello everyone, John Steele here again, and Mike Innes is back with me for part two of our big J3 season preview. Mike, how are you doing? Are you all right?
Hi there, John. Thanks very much. All good here, and as ever, happy to talk about some more J3.
Fantastic to hear that, Mike. Yes, and I think we're going to touch on six more teams from the 2022 roster in part two this episode. So we'll, let's do the first batch of three teams now, and we're going to start with a big one, I think it's fair to say, Matsumoto Yamaga. Now, this is a team that spent a lot of time in J2 and even J1 since coming into the J-League in 2012. But I think it's fair to say, you know, last season their J2 campaign was an unmitigated disaster, Mike, ending in relegation. And I think there's quite a lot to talk about here. So before I turn you loose, let's just bring in a quick question that came in on Twitter from Gabriele Anello. So, Gab, thanks for the question, as always. He is a Yamagata fan. I don't know whether that means he should listen more carefully for the next few minutes or just skip ahead, till we start talking about somebody else. But he says he doesn't think Matsumoto are going to be a juggernaut in J3 this season. I'm inclined to agree, and I think that's reinforced by looking at their ins and outs on the playing side. But Mike, Matsumoto Yamaga, surely it's going to be better than last season. But what are we thinking?
Just to observe that I've got the word disaster in the very first line of my notes as well, actually, John. So that's a bit of a coincidence, and perhaps a bit of a foreshadowing as well. In fairness, I've used that word to describe the last three seasons, dating back to 2019. As recently as 2019, they were in J1. We were talking about a year ago, we were talking about, could there be a big club which gets relegated out of J2? It turned out to be them. And as James commented in the review pod, it was a deserved relegation. They were consistently the weakest team in J2 last year. Attacking record was poor, although at least roughly similar to a number of other clubs. But the defence was easily the worst in the division. 71 goals conceded in 42 games. So looking ahead, some people, when assessing kind of likely outcomes for the season, they've talked about the advantages provided by Matsumoto's budget. And I remember that there were figures circulating at the end of last season which portrayed Matsumoto as having had in 2020 an operating revenue that was more than the seven smallest J3 clubs combined, and was nearly double that of the next biggest club, which was Kitakyushu. But I don't think that's a very sort of strong argument in terms of enabling a prediction for the season ahead. If it was simply a matter of having access to cash, Matsumoto, they wouldn't have ended up dropping out of J2. It's not what you've got, it's what you do with it, John. That is my basic point. And what Matsumoto have done with it over the winter, I think, bears some examination. First of all, they've kept on Nanami as coach. His track record when he was in charge at Iwata was pretty mixed. He got them promoted from J2 in 2015, but then was sacked halfway through 2019 with Jubilo bottom of the table. So Matsumoto last year represents his only experience of coaching away from Iwata, and on balance, I think it's pretty surprising that he's still there. The squad that he's got to work with is easily the biggest in J3. We talked a year ago about this being indicative of a bit of a lack of focus, a lack of a clear plan, and I think that this remains a concern for Matsumoto. As we record today, they've got 36 players in their squad. For a while, it was 38, including six goalkeepers. As they initially announced the squad as including last year's first choice goalkeeper, Kakoi, who, as in the previous pod we mentioned, has in fact joined Sagamihara, and also Go Dongmin, who has read the writing on the wall and taken a loan deal in Korea. I don't know what's gone on there, John, but nothing about that situation, I think, reflects well on the club and their ability to manage a group of players. Based on an analysis of last season's problems, the fact that no one who played regularly in the worst defence in J2 last year has left, the fact that no one has left seems odd to me. The departures are from attacking roles, maybe guys like Serginho or Kotegawa, who've been released or who have deals elsewhere. Shuto Kawai, Kunitomo Suzuki, Toyofumi Sakano have stayed on with other clubs in J2. In terms of new players, guys to look out for, I guess that we're likely to see Victor from Yamagata in goal, Paulinho returning from Okayama central midfield, maybe Ren Komatsu back from loan at Yamaguchi up front, with Lukao, if Lukao is ever fit. It could be that Nanami is pinning his defensive hopes on Haruki Mitsuda, who returning from a very successful loan spell at Gifu. The fans are at least excited about young forwards Itsuki Enomoto and Ayumu Yokoyama. But on paper, as we were saying in the green room, John, picking out a team that makes sense and has reasonable alternatives is surprisingly difficult in spite of the number of players available. So in summary then, Gab, to address your question, as things stand, I think the fact that Nanami is still there for now, because I think the chances of him moving on during the season look high, and that Matsumoto haven't done anything to address their sprawling squad, especially the back line, mean they're not likely to be moving straight back up to J2. And as I said at the end of the last episode, John, how about Matsumoto to finish below Nagano?
I hope Gabs is still listening, because he asked a couple of other questions that we're going to come to later on different teams. But I think, when we recorded part one, we mentioned Sagamihara's squad and how it looked sort of oven ready for a sort of top two, top three, top four push or tilt in 2022. When I look at Matsumoto Yamaga's comings and goings, it seems like a team that's oven ready for like seventh or eighth place, to be honest. And I think you're right to pick out Victor coming in from Yamagata. That's a player who I think will be the regular number one. And he's a really good goalkeeper. We know that. So that's a good signing. That's big. However, my big question mark is you've highlighted the defence and how they struggled a lot in J2 last year. It'd be hard to believe that they're going to be, you know, too much better in J3, because I think J3 is going to be very competitive, you know, this year as well. And in midfield, where is the creativity going to come from here? Because Serginho has gone. He was the guy that they were leading on to do that last year. I mean, Shuto Kawai was a massive flop, but he's gone to Yamagata. Paulinho coming in is going to add sort of steel, you would think, and calm to the midfield as the anchor man, but he's not going to create much. And scoring the goals, I think, could also be a problem, because I think Ren Komatsu and Akira Toshima are okay, but they're not world beaters. Lukau, if fit, should be a flat track bully at this level, but fitness is a big question mark there. And in terms of forwards going out, Shoito's gone, Toyofumi Sakano's gone, Kunitomo Suzuki's gone, Kazumi Yamaguchi's gone now. In fairness, they had all these players last season, it didn't stop them getting relegated, but I think you'd still rather have at least a couple of those in the squad, wouldn't you, to try and get you back up. So yeah, I think it's a tricky one, this, because they are pretty much the biggest club in the division, aren't they? Unless I'm forgetting anybody. You know, it's kind of huge to see them down there, and I'm already anticipating, if I get to see them play away at YSCC early on in the season, the stadium is going to have like 3,000 Matsumoto supporters in it, much more than the home team. That's sort of big club vibe that you get from them. But on the playing side, I think it's going to have to be I believe it when I see it with them this year. I can't imagine that group of players that we've discussed here finishing in the top two. I think it might be a season of consolidation if things go okay for Nanami, or more likely, I think, as you were alluding to, it might be a case of just, you know, ripping it up and starting again either during the season or this time next year. I would love to be positive. We love you, Gab, but we gotta give you some tough love on Matsumoto, I think, at the moment. But we'll wait and see. I don't know. Let's make sure Gab stays on the line with us, Mike, for the rest of the pod. So we'll move on. We'll talk about Toyama in the next section. Now, they've been sort of, you know, my image of Toyama is like a struggling J2 side. So I suppose, you know, like you mentioned when we were talking beforehand, it's no surprise that they've been, I think they were the first ever club to be relegated into J3. Is that right, historically speaking? And then they've been there for a while. So I suppose newer sort of J-League followers would have Toyama down as a kind of quintessential J3 team, even though I think of them as a J2 one. I'm pretty sure that at the midway point last season, when we did a kind of review of the first half of the season, we talked about Toyama in pretty glowing terms as being a promotion contender, but it didn't really materialise in the second half of the season, did it? They went off the boil and fell away. And Gabriele asks us another question on Toyama. They've splashed the market. They've brought in quite a few interesting players. And is it finally going to be their year? I mean, I'm not qualified to comment, really. So, Mike, Toyama, is it going to be their year? They tricked us in the first half of last season. What do you have in mind for them in 2022?
Well, Gab, I've taken with one hand, and I'll try and give with another. So I think with Toyama, they were set up to succeed, I think, last year under the coach Nobuhiro Ishizaki. As you said, John, they had a very good first half of the season. They were actually top of the division at the halfway stage, fell away as autumn approached, and ended up in fourth. For 2022, looking at a tougher sort of a challenge in a bigger division populated by better teams, the question is, do the team have the sort of single-mindedness, the resilience to keep going to the end of a more competitive season? Ishizaki, he's still there. Not surprising, although I think we discussed in the review pod, he made some mistakes handling last season's downturn, but it's not like it's beyond his capabilities to get the club back to J2. He'll have to do it without two of his first choice players from last year, Shoma Otoizumi. His upward career trajectory continues with a move to Mito. He played typically on the right hand side of midfield. And then they had a powerful centre back, left back, Issei Tone, and he's gone to promoted Iwate. A clear replacement for Otoizumi looks likely to come via a shuffling round of existing players. But Shoma Kamata, who had an excellent 2021 at Fukushima and brings J1 experience from Shimizu and Shonan, Kazuma Takayama from Ormia and the giant Takuma Shikayama, whose loan from Nagasaki has been made permanent. All of those guys are capable of stepping into Tone's position. Toyama stole a lot of headlines early on in the closed season when they announced the signing from Gifu of Shota Kawanish, scorer of 31 league goals in the last 3 years at Gifu. And Kawanishi's arrival raises interesting questions about how Ishizaki views the jigsaw puzzle of his attacking options. What sort of picture will he look to construct from players such as Kawanishi, Mateus Leiria, Shunta Takahashi, Yohei Ono, Tsubasa Yoshihira and Nobuyuki Shina? Some good players there. What will it mean in terms of rotation, use of substitutions, the development of team selections throughout the season? Could it be that Kawanishi, last season's J3 top scorer, will need to take his place as an impact sub with Toyama? One new signing who looks set to slot straight into the team is central midfielder Arthur Silva, loaned from FC Tokyo, someone who was loaned to Yokohama FC during the latter part of last season. In fact, he has J3 experience from when he first came to Japan in 2019 and took a place in the FC Tokyo under-23 side, which, as listeners may know, was taking part in the division at that time. He looks set to add polish and steel to the heart of this Toyama team. Fond of a long-range shot too, isn't he? Single-mindedness and resilience may also be attributes he can bring, and I wonder if he's the sort of player who, when added to a J3 squad, has the potential to turn contenders into promotion winners. Certainly, another top four finish doesn't look to be beyond Ishizaki and Katare.
Yeah, I feel similarly confident about their chances in 2022, Mike. I think, losing Shoma Otoizumi is a blow, and Ise Tone, as you mentioned. And I believe Shohana has left as well, right? He's gone to Mariasu in the JFL.
Yeah, you're right, but the thing about Hanai is that just that he was released with Tone and Otoizumi. You know, they were signed by rival clubs, as it were. But with Hanai, they just released him, and he then later got a deal with the JFL team. Yeah.
Interesting. I mean, it's going to be weird for me to see their kind of starting lineup graphic without Hanai at number 10 this year. But I think, looking at the players that have come in, we talked about Shoma Kamata at the back. I think that's a good signing. Takuma Shikayama from Nagasaki as well. Looks like a pretty shrewd bit of business. Kazuma Takayama coming in from Omiya, another defender I don't know much about, but you'd imagine, lazy research from me. He's coming from J2, so should be okay. Arthur Silva is a really interesting one because he looked pretty good for Yokohama FC in J1. When he spent finished the season on loan there in 2021. So that's a real transfer coup for Toyama, and I think that's probably the transfer that along with Shota Kawanishi. That's probably what Gabriel is talking about when he says they've really splashed into the transfer market this time. I predict big things. I think you mentioned a jigsaw puzzle of that kind of maybe front five or front six. They didn't quite get that right in the second half of the season, did they, with Matias Lieira, for example. He wasn't exactly integrated into the system quite as well as he could have been. And I think he's a good player. So it'd be interesting to see if that kind of jigsaw puzzle is solved by Ishizaki this year. But I think on paper, like last year, I think that looks like a pretty strong Toyama squad. And I'm pleased to see them making these big moves with players like Arthur Silva and Shota Kawanishi, because I think there've been question marks in the past about YKK, the kind of owning a team, the owning a company rather, and how much money they have or are willing to splash on Toyama while they sort of languish in the third tier. So to see them kind of by J3 standards, I think those two signings, Arthur Silva and Kawanishi particularly, kind of like rock the city kind of signings, aren't they? They are serious moves with a view to getting a promotion. So I'm far too nervous, far too cautious to say they'll be top two, but I think a good season looks very very likely, doesn't it, for them? So we'll wait and see. see how they get on. But it's going to be interesting. And I think they'll finish higher than Matsumoto based on the conversation we've had so far. Mike, how about Fujieda, My FC? Now, you know, they're based in Shizuoka. It's often considered to be a kind of a stronghold or heartland of Japanese football. I'd agree with that. They obviously had that amazing season in 2019 where they missed out on finishing in the top two just on goal difference. But mostly I see them as a kind of mid-table team. I don't know if they've done much in the transfer market this winter to sway my opinion on that. What are we thinking about Fujieda this year?
Well, regular listeners will know that, somewhat to my surprise, Fujieda were able to transform themselves into one of J3's must-watch teams last year when Daisuke Sudo took over as coach halfway through the season. He had an all-out attack approach, paying dividends with some really excellent results until the side ran out of steam with a tricky period of fixtures in the last few rounds. Over the winter, he has concentrated on greatly reducing the age of his squad. No fewer than five players from 2021 have opted for retirement. And perhaps under the radar, Fujieda have brought in some pretty canny replacements. So I'll jump straight in, John, and I'll say that one of the new players I'm most looking forward to seeing in the whole of the division this year is at Fujieda, and that's Tomoyuki Doi. He graduated in 2019 and then opted to join Albirex Niigata Singapore. Last year, he moved to another team in the Singapore Premier League, that's Horgang United. And the bare facts are that in those two seasons, he netted 30 goals in 2021, taking the twin titles of the league's top scorer and player of the year. He's quick, he's direct, he's an aggressive goal scorer, and seeing how he transitions into a first ever season in the J-League under a coach with the philosophy of Sudo at MyFC has the potential to be very exciting. Doesn't stop with Doi, as Fujieda have also brought in on loan from Gamba Ren Shibamoto, loaned to Sagamihara last year. An assured central midfield player, somewhat in the style, to my eyes at least, of Saw Kawahara, who captained Kumamoto to the J3 title. Shibamoto is only 22, but has more than 100 J3 appearances to his name with Gamba under 23. He didn't get a look in at Sagamihara after Takuya Takagi came in as coach, but the move to Fujieda gives him the chance to make up for lost time and perhaps be a key player in the side alongside Jun Suzuki. Talking of Kumamoto, a trio of players join from the reigning J3 champions. Kei Uchiyama, first choice goalkeeper down there in 2020, but he moves to Fujieda as competition for Takuya Sugimoto. There's also Keisuke Ogasawara, a first-choice centre-back at Roasso in 2019 and 2020, suffered from injury and fell out of favour there last year. Not the biggest, but MyFC do need something extra to throw into the mix in defence. Thirdly, there's attacking midfielder, central midfielder Taisuke Mizuno, who returns to Fujieda after a single season at Kumamoto, during which time he got limited opportunity. Let's also note that from Kawasaki comes 24-year-old defender Kaito Kamiya on loan for the season. So 2022 will be Sudo's squad at Fujieda, and although his instinct may be to attack, he also needs a less generous defence if the team are to achieve improved results. Tomoyuki Doi may be one for the neutrals to follow. Ogasawara and Kamiya may be more important to Fujieda's chances of success.
I think that's a really, really good rundown and analysis of what they've done in the transfer market, Mike, in terms of Fujieda's kind of transfer policy. I think in a very general sense, you can see Sudo trying to rejuvenate the squad a little bit. You know, the players that have been released and retired are on the, you know, the older end of the spectrum, clearly. And quite a few of the additions that we haven't talked about are from universities or even high schools, right? Like I noticed they've gone for two, I hesitate to say that they're foreign because I actually don't know, but is it Raya Lima has come in from Shugakukan High School? Raya Lima Kawa, I think is pronounced. And Pedro Enrique Campos Da Costa, to give him his full title. He's from the same high school as well. So I don't know. But yeah, it seems like that might be deliberate policy. They've come as a pair from the same high school. Yes. So it's interesting to see how much playing time they'll get or if they'll be integrated much at all this season. But I think, Fujieda kind of turned into a really exciting team at both ends of the pitch, didn't they, for better or for worse, in the second half of the season last year under Sudo. So I think we were both a bit sceptical about his, or I certainly was a bit sceptical about his appointment, didn't really know what to expect, but it made Fujieda games very entertaining, and I think there's a difference between entertaining and being successful. But I agree with your analysis. I think if the defence can be tightened up even a fraction, you know, we're sort of back in the Yuki Stealth conversation from YCC a couple of years ago. If the defence can be tightened up, I think there are plenty of good options in midfield and up front for Fujieda. So I am tempted to think it's probably going to be mid-table again. But if we accept that the journey's often more important than the destination, I think it's going to be a fun season for Fujieda supporters. So I think there's going to be a lot of goals, certainly at one end, possibly both. So yeah, I don't think it's going to be boring, I think, at Fujieda. And I'm hoping that they sort of play their way into my consciousness a little bit more this season, which I do accept. I know the world doesn't revolve around me, and it's not their job to impress me, particularly when they go out there and play their matches. But we do tend to, when we discuss J3 together, there are always kind of other teams drawing our eye, aren't there, and taking our attention. So hopefully Fujieda will be one of those this season. But going to be interesting to see. Mike, good stuff so far, as always. Let's take a short comfort break now. When we come back, we're going to look over three more of the teams that will be making up this season's J3 roster. So we'll be back in a moment. J-Talk Extra Time. Welcome back, everyone. Mike and I have had a quick comfort break. We're refreshed and ready to continue. Mike, the next team on our season preview is one that I'm hoping you can talk about in detail, because as usual, when it comes to Azul Claro Numazu, I'm kind of at a bit of a loose end here. The same sort of number of players have come in as gone out, pretty much. But, as usual, I think I foresee a kind of hard season probably for Numazu, and a kind of bottom third finish looks pretty likely from my perspective. I think they will miss Ryusuke Otomo, the goalkeeper who's gone back to Montedio Yamagata. His loan has finished. But there are plenty of ins and outs, including some names that are familiar, maybe if their faces, even if their faces aren't. So, Mike, Numazu, am I overly pessimistic or overly ignorant here? What's the deal?
Well, I think the last couple of times that we've talked about Numazu, John, it's felt as if we have concerns about the club that are bordering on the sort of existential. And I'm sorry to say that there's nothing happening to suggest a change in direction. In the 2021 review pod, we covered and will continue to monitor closely the stadium issues which cause there to be a question mark over Numazu's ability to retain a J3 licence for next year. And this sort of minus point being in the public domain must make it harder to attract sponsors, to grow the local fan base and to persuade players to come to the club. Late in the closed season, Azul Claro did announce that they've signed a business partnership with Saigon FC, who play in the top division in Vietnam. But the focus of that arrangement is on youth development and international exchange rather than providing a means for Numazu to access good Vietnamese players to boost their results in J3. And so this may explain why the two players with whom loan deals have been announced have not, as we record, been allocated places in Azul Claro's first team squad. They don't currently have squad numbers. And so the deal with Saigon may have the potential to be interesting, but can't really have any immediate impact. Numazu finished 2021 by dropping down to second bottom in the division. And to be honest, it's a bit hard to identify solid reasons for believing they can improve on that performance this year. As you've just said, John, they've lost their goalkeeper, Ryusuke Otomo. He's certainly one of their two best players alongside the forward, Junya Takahashi, who we mentioned in the pod talking about Fukushima. Their loan spells have both concluded. And the coach, Masataka Imai, hasn't been able to call on further favours from his previous club, Yamagata, that's the connection, to obtain replacements. The list of ins is, I would say, almost embarrassingly meagre. Two young goalkeepers, Hiromu Musha and Daiki Mitsui from Iwate, and on loan from Nagoya, respectively. A centre-back, right-back, Yuya Tsukegi, comes from FC Osaka in the JFL. A couple of existing loan deals are made permanent, Tatsuya Anzai from Verdi and Noah Kenshin Brown from Mito. There are three rookies, of whom attacking midfielder Ryota Kawata from Tokyo Gakugei University may be the most likely to see playing time. That's it. Really very little for Numazu supporters to get excited about. Of those players, I'd say only Tsukegi and Anzai look set to be regular starters. And as with YSCC, if Numazu are going to have a chance of doing more than sort of treading water, I think there's a need for existing squad members to kind of come more to the fore. Players like right midfielder, centre midfielder Ryoma Kita, and attacking midfielder Yuma Mori. I'd include Kosei Uryu in this list as well, as I think the club expected more from him, having had such a stellar 2020 in the JFL at Verspa Oita. And as we were talking about in the green room, John, are we ever going to see Hadi Fayad play a match? I'm sure there are J-League strategists desperate for him to succeed and so help develop the league's reach in Malaysia. He injured his ACL in training back in March last year, but extends his loan from Okayama for another season. But with heavy heart, John, it's looking like another year spent near the foot of the table for Numazu.
Yeah, I think based on the analysis from you there, Mike, it's hard to disagree, so I won't, and we'll move on fairly quickly. I suppose in mitigation, I believe Ryo Watanabe is still there, is that right? He hasn't gone anywhere. So yeah, I think they do have there a kind of... I'm hesitant to big him up too much, just in case people tune in expecting a sort of Messi and Ronaldo fusion from him, but I think he's a bit of a Rolls Royce in terms of forwards. By J3 standards, I'm quite surprised that nobody has swooped to move him somewhere else. So he'll be important again, I think, as probably the main striker, the guy who's leading the line up top. I agree with you. I think there's players like Noah Kenshin Brown. He's been very visible, hasn't he, at other clubs like Saniki. He's played at and Mito, obviously, but it's time for him to perhaps really make a name for himself and step up this year. I think Hadi Fayad, yeah, again, we're sort of, you know, still waiting to see if what kind of player he actually could be. And the guys from Vietnam, I mean, I'm not even sure if they're actually in Japan yet. I think probably the entry restrictions mean that, you know, we there's a lot of foreign players. We're not sure about whether they're actually coming in yet or not, or when they can come. So that is probably going to delay them being integrated into the team as well. Yes, I think When a team that struggled in the previous season starts the new year with the same manager and a squad which looks no stronger, it's very hard to be overly optimistic, isn't it? So I think, yes, again, the bottom six places is where we will probably see Numazu in 2022. Mike, next team, next cab off the rank, as Ben might say, if he were hosting, Gifu. Now, we're going to see them, higher up the table, aren't we, than Numazu, we have to hope, probably somewhere in that kind of top six region, it seems. We'll tread carefully because we know we have lots of Gifu supporting listeners who will be hounding us on social media if we drop any clangers here. So, on Gifu, they have a new manager through the door in the form of Toshiya Miura. Quite a few interesting players in and out, especially in terms of players coming in. I think on the face of it, the squad looks stronger. Shota Kawanishi is a big blow, but in terms of players coming in, there's plenty of quality. Is it going to be their time to get back into the big time in J2? Mike, FC Gifu, what are we thinking?
Well, I'm very, very conscious that we have, some FC Gifu supporters who are very close to the pod. So, you can perhaps picture me at the moment cracking my knuckles and girding my loins a little bit in preparation for this particular segment of the pod. So, okay, let's go. Alongside Matsumoto, surely the most talked about J3 team of the winter are Gifu. No other club in the division has a squad which looks like theirs, or has been involved in transfer activity like them. In among all the Gifu talk, though, there is a phrase that I've encountered amongst Japanese supporters doing sort of previews and reviews of the close season. There's a phrase that I've encountered that's struck a bit of a chord with me regarding the club's preparations for the new season, and that phrase is high risk. The attention has been on the players that they've brought into the club, but I think that there is a risk of overlooking the significance of the departures as well. For one reason or another, Gifu have lost five of the players who were regular starters in the second half of last season. There's the captain and the centre-back, Kentaro Kai. He's gone to Iwate. As we've mentioned before, Shota Kawanishi has gone to Toyama. Kensei Nakashima, arguably one of Gifu's most consistent performers of last year, was surprisingly released and then signed for Sagamihara. And then, as we've mentioned in this episode, Haruki Mitsuda has returned to Matsumoto after a loan spell. And also tricky forward Shunpei Fukuhori has moved on at the end of his loan as well. That's a lot of J3 quality walking out the door. As you said, John, overseeing these preparations is a new coach, Toshiya Miura. He joined the coach as a technical director in September. He's a capable guy who made his name at Omiya before moving on to Sapporo, Kobe and Corfu. After that, he resurfaced in Vietnam, coaching the national team and then Ho Chi Minh City. Gifu are the first club to employ Miura since he left Vietnam, which I'll observe means that he hasn't coached in the J-League since the summer of 2011. So with the previously mentioned players having moved on, what does his promotion targeting squad look like? Well, it's old. It's the oldest squad in the division. Average age is 28 by comparison. Several other clubs have an average squad age of less than 24. It's by no means difficult to map out a credible Gifu starting 11, which contains one player under the age of 30 and draws upon incoming veterans like Freire from Nagasaki at centre-back, Tomoya Ugajin from Urawa at right back, Daisuke Kikuchi from Kashiwa on the left-hand side of midfield, Yoshihiro Shoji returning from Kyoto in centre midfield, and Junya Tanaka from Kobe up front. This starts to feel a bit less like a team making up a solid unit that can win games and more like a collection of names. They're good players. I'm looking forward to seeing them on the J3 stage, but I'm also excited to see younger signings like Charles Nduka from YFCC, Kosuke Fujioka from Miyazaki, and a player that I know that you like, John, Junki Hata from Nagasaki. Noting that Fujioka and Hata, while younger than the veterans that I mentioned, they're both 27. A further point is that there are now a lot of players in Gifu's squad who are used to something different from what being a footballer in J3 is like. Summer kickoffs always being in the evening, better pitches, better medical training facilities, perhaps more comfortable travel. In that circumstance, can Miura build a blended, cohesive, promotion-winning side? Last year, Gifu's difficulties were that the coach, Takeyoshi Anma, couldn't make a team or impose a clear system, and they didn't have any good young players to put pressure on underperforming veterans. What I'm looking at now is a high-risk approach to fixing those problems.
Yeah, I think that's a very, very good analysis. And I'm sure Stu and Richie won't have found anything to disagree with at all so far. I think when I look at this this Gifu side, the squad, I take into account the points that you make about it. It looks like a rather expensive and carefully assembled collection of individuals rather than a team right now. And I think perhaps the fact that they have a new manager plays into that, because we're not sure exactly how they're going to line up or what the style is going to be. I think even taking that into account, that collection of individuals that they have is promotion worthy. And I am thinking that top three, top four sounds right for that group. So my question would be, like, you know, it's gone wrong for Gifu before with a very strong looking squad last season, for example. So the question is, like, where are the weaknesses? Where could it go wrong? I think Kazushige Kirihata having his loan from Kashiwa extended as the kind of first choice goalkeeper is very important, because he was really good last year. So I don't foresee any problems on that score. I think in terms of the defenders that are coming, you mentioned Freire coming in from Nagasaki. Well, he should be pretty good at this level and will offset the loss of Kentaro Kai to Morioka, as we mentioned. The other defender coming in, Kazuya Okamura, a bit of a strange one. I don't think he looked particularly good at all in Kitakyushu's central defence last year, but to be fair, in Kitakyushu in general, pretty horrible defensively. It's probably unfair to single him out. And then we are kind of in the territory of a little bit like Jinizumi Sawa going back to Omi, aren't we? Because we have Hennick coming back to Gifu. We've got Yoshihiro Shoji coming back. So, I mean, they're two good players. So hopefully it'll work out. But, you know, will it be as good as the last time they were there at Nagaragao? We don't know. Daisuke Kikuchi, yeah, it has got enough quality to be fine in J3. Ugajin, sort of very much an impressive signing, you know, coming in from Urawa. You're not going to get much better pedigree than that, or are you, in J3? And he'll link up with, help me out, Mike.
Kashiwagi.
Yeah, thank you, Yosuke Kashiwagi. Yeah, so there's kind of a Reds hotline in the midfield from the off. And then up front, I think there's a real embarrassment of riches here with Fujioka and Nduka, Hata, and did we talk about Junya Tanaka coming in from Vissel Kobe? I mean,
just mentioned in the list.
Yeah, so he's a little bit older, obviously, but there is a very fine player in there. And I think in terms of squad depth in the forward positions, even taking into account the fact that they've lost arguably the kind of star attacker in the division from last year in Kawanishi, they have so many other options than them. I think whatever they do, it's going to be interesting, but I think Yeah, if Gifu don't finish in the top four, of course, the top two is the target, let's not forget. But if Gifu aren't in the top four, I think we're going to be having a, you know, some kind of a heated inquest, you know, about 10 months from now, aren't we? So, yeah, I think there are lots of positives. But what's interesting and intriguing about Gifu is I don't think they're a sure thing, even though they sort of should be with that squad, I think. I think question marks about the manager, Mura, as you pointed out as well. So, let's see how it goes. But I think there's absolutely bags of potential in that squad. And if they fail to finish in the top three or four, then that will count as a failure, I think. So, the high risk might also apply to the fact that I think they've sort of piled pressure on themselves by bringing in so many expensive and high profile players. But we'll see. I think it's going to be interesting for sure. One more team for us to discuss in part two of our season previews, Mike. We're going to talk about Gainare Tottori at this point. So obviously last season kind of a weird one, right? I think it's fair to say. I mean, they've had mixed results generally. Finished bottom in 2017, then third in 2018, just missing out on promotion. And then, I don't think they ever really got going last year at all, did they? It was pretty slim pickings, and obviously losing 8-1. Was it 8-1 at home to Nagano? It didn't help. So, Kim Jong-song has stayed on as manager at Tottori for the new season. The ins and outs are pretty Spartan by J3 standards. I think they've got about 12 or 13 players coming in and 11 or 12 going out. So it's a phrase that I overuse, I suppose, evolution, not revolution for Tottori. And one more question on them to throw you, Mike, before we get your comments. Gabriele asks, it's Yuya Taguchi and Kim Jong-song together. How many goals is Taguchi going to score this season? And Gabriele, obviously a big fan of Taguchi with Kim Jong-song as the manager. So Tottori, Mike, I feel like it's got to be an improvement on last year, hasn't it? But how much of an improvement can we realistically expect?
Yeah, it was a tough year for them, wasn't it, last year, especially in terms of defensive organisation and personnel, the worst defensive record in the division. So as you said, Kim has been kept on for the season. But at the end of last year, as I mentioned in the review pod, there were glimpses of things coming together for him with a series of improved results and performances to conclude the season on a bit more of an optimistic note. I think Tottori are a team that I'm in two minds about, and the squad ins and outs that you've just sort of touched upon goes some way to explaining why this is. On the one hand, you look at the players who've left the club, and there's no one who has gone elsewhere because they've been approached by another club. The only guys who've gone from last season's squad are those that Gainare chose to release. And that means that by some sort of miracle, a bunch of key players are still with them. Gab's favourite forward, Yuya Taguchi. Another attacking player, Daichi Ishikawa, centre midfielder Hiroto Sese, and another centre midfielder, Taiki Arai, for example, they all stay on. There's a degree of stability as a consequence, maybe something to build on. On the other hand, when you look at the players coming into the squad, as with Numazu, you get a clear picture of what a small operation Tottori is. They've signed seven rookies, but only, I think, three players from club teams. And few of the squads that we're talking about in these previews are down to such bare bones. In one of the club team signings, I think Kim has tried to address the issue with the defence that I mentioned. In essence, Tottori lacked an experienced player around which to base their defensive organisation. And the main player they've brought in is an attempt to meet that need. Course game, Masitani, 28. He won J3 in 2018 with Ryukyu, where Kim was the coach. So far, so promising, but Masitani has since spent 2.5 frustrating years at Okayama, where, as I understand it, he suffered a serious injury. But what is definitely a fact, though, is he hasn't played a league game since the opening round of the 2020 season. There's a lot of pressure on Masitani. You can see what Kim is trying to do, but by the same token, you also see how limited by circumstances he is in his ability to do it. But there are some promising signings elsewhere. Ex-Fukushima goal-scoring attacking midfielder Ryosuke Tamura, most recently in Korea, and another midfielder, Kosuke Chiku, who joins after a successful season at Albirex Niigata, Singapore. Of the rookies from Hiroshima Shudo University, Hibiki Nagai is a dynamic right-back. Mun Inju played in central midfield and up front for Korea University, where Kim spent 5 years before going to Ryukyu. Squad depth is not something that Tottori have at their disposal, but let's say if they're luckier with injuries than last year and Taguchi continues to develop, there's enough here to suggest incremental improvement.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty solid analysis. My thinking is fairly similar. I think we're going to see a more coherent and more cohesive Tottori than in 2021, but I don't think it's realistic to expect like an improvement, you know, into the, you know, the higher reaches of the table. I think if we get to December and Tottori are in mid-table and have done okay, that'll represent a pretty solid improvement from last year and a base to build on into 2023. So I think I'm expecting to see them somewhere in mid-table at the end of the season, but possibly lower if things go wrong and some of these you know, new signings don't really work out. I think picking up on Ryosuke Tamura is a good one. I remember this time last year we were sort of surprised to see him leave Fukushima, right? And go to Anyang in Korea. I mean, I don't know. I actually don't know how his year there has gone. I assume because he's back after a season not great. And I also think it's interesting that he's not gone back to Fukushima, which is kind of what you would. That's a kind of well-trodden path for J Leagues, isn't it? To come back to their parent club, if you like, or their former club. So to see him take on a new challenge at Tottori, I think is interesting. And he is a really, really good player. So I think that will offset the loss of, Masataka Kani, for example, going to Nara Club, which is, I think, is a bit of a strange one. So, I don't really know what to expect in terms of playing style, because it took a really, really long time for them to get used to Kim, didn't it, last year when he came in. So we'll wait and see. But I think lower mid-table would probably represent a pretty reasonable 2022 for Tottori. And you're right as well to mention it's an operation that's run on a tight budget, I think. And yes, that's something we should bear in mind when we're sort of evaluating their transfer business as well. Mike, just before we wrap up, I want to double back to Gifu real quick, because I forgot to mention when we were talking to him, I think Daisuke Ishizu, the attacker formerly of Fukuoka, has been spotted in their kind of pre-season training camp. So I don't think he is necessarily joining or anything's official, but if they could add him to the squad as well, that would really cement their embarrassment of riches in terms of forward positions, I think. But I don't know. I think he's been spotted like in their training camp. He's been seen in a few sort of social media photos, so I assume something is afoot, even if he's just training with them to keep himself fit. I don't know. So one to watch between now and the start of the season, potentially. But yeah, Mike, I think we've given a pretty good rundown of six more J3 teams here in part two. I think we'll leave it there for now and reconvene for part three and run the rule over six more teams that are making up the 2022 roster in the third tier. But yeah, thanks as always to our listeners. We appreciate you coming along for the ride. And yes, if you're supporting us and the big J-Talk podcast, parent podcast on Patreon, we really appreciate that support as well. So yeah, please keep that coming if you can. But we'll leave it here for now. And yeah, please stay tuned. Part three of our big J3 season previews is coming along soon. But that's all for now. Have a good one. Talk to you soon.